It's called the Scarab. It's some kind of world-destroying weapon. It's designed to protect its host. To say what you want. Sometimes it does what you want, and sometimes it doesn't.
I think I cut a bus in half.
Da, 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 da.
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world got crazy.
Are you serious?
Ladies and gentlemen,
it's showtime.
What's going on, ma'am, fam? It's Richard and Ken here. Brian's got the night off. He's not doing so hot after seeing this movie, so he's just walking around. You know, this one really hurt since he's so anti-DC. To have some positive thoughts. He's really struggling, so he's just wandering around DFW right now, getting his things together. But we are here. We did this last time. We had a count of like how many. There we go. It's our 14th DCEU movie. I don't know if we've done all 14. We've done close to that.
I think we might have.
Yeah.
At this point.
I can't think of any that we said. Oh, No. Yeah, I think we have. Most of the time we got Shane in the mix. Shane's out this week too. So it's just Richard and Kent talking DC, you know, two. You know me, I've got so many opinions on comic books, so I'm going to bring the heat here. But no, this should be an interesting conversation because it's a little different, and we can start this off. Ken, how are you tonight before we get into this?
I'm doing great. I think Brian's out because it's finally sunk in that he probably lost the movie draft, so he's having to take a few weeks.
Yeah, that's true.
To prepare himself for whatever movie the VIPs vote that he has to review.
I think Barbie carried me, man.
I think you're the champion. The back-to-back. Yeah.
If I have a good Oscar season, we got a dynasty on our hands.
Perhaps.
But we'll see.
Brian will have the first pick of the Oscar draft, though. So if he nails that, then it might be over early.
It might be. So he's probably going to pick this, I would think. But no. We're here talking. It's an interesting time. Before we get into the nitty gritty of this movie, I want to talk about, as we always want to do on here, what is the DCEU? Why, where are we? You know, where does this live? It's so funny that like they actually finally made something that's like a property no one has really done before. In an original way, with like a diverse original cast of kind of mostly people that folks aren't that familiar with, with some original insight and direction, and it's the swan song of the entire universe. Like, so funny. Like, if this had been first, not to say this is a perfect movie, but I probably would have been a little more excited than I was when I came out of Man of Steel or whatever was first.
If this had been before Black Adam, you're saying?
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah, if this had been before Black Adam, or yeah, if this had come out like right after Wonder Woman, I would have been like, all right, they're doing stuff, but it's so, I mean, and who knows, like maybe this is like the cost of whatever Gunn's going to do to reinvent this entire universe, and you'll go, who cares? That was kind of a cool property, but if that's what we had to sacrifice to get actually good Batman and Superman movies, then that's fine. I think that, you know, I think we're all kind of in that boat, but.
And to that point, it's actually amazing. It just shows you how bad it had gotten with DC and Warner Brothers. The fact that they announced the Gunn stuff when they did, it's like, okay, it's worth winning everybody back now.
Yeah.
Instead of having these movies possibly tank because of this, because of what people know that.
So funny. This, yeah.
It's like they gave up basically those box offices to win back the fanboys like a year too early.
Totally.
They could have kept all that under NDA. I'm sure it would have gotten out, but everyone could have just been like, I don't know what you're talking about. Kind of like with JJ and Star Wars, right? Mm-hmm. Until it was done. And maybe these make twice as much just because people think these actually matter.
Totally. And keep in mind, they thought at the time Flash was going to be really good. Like they undercut what they thought was like a really big and great movie for them. It wasn't. But they, from their point of view, so funny. But this is I was not familiar with this character. It's like one of the original superheroes, right? So, do you have any education on Blue Beetle?
I have zero education on Blue Beetle. This is why we're missing Batman Shane this week, because he is the DC encyclopedia of the show.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll speak from the general audience standpoint on this one. Had no idea who Blue Beetle was, and I'm not sure, based on the box office, that anyone else in America did either.
Yeah. Yeah, it was not one they could really say...
Oh, they're making a Blue Beetle? I got to go see that.
Like they would maybe with Aquaman or Wonder Woman or maybe even Black Adam to a nerdier extent. But I think one of the main reasons this failed independently of what DC fans know about James Gunn taking over is when you have a property, I think that not a lot of people are familiar with, you got to have a star in the lead. You got to have Robert Downey Jr. be Iron Man. Right? So people have a reason to say, okay. I'm not saying...
Even at that point in his career, he's 50 times the star of Zolo here, right?
I don't know. Not necessarily saying Zolo is bad in this. I'm just saying if this was Bad Bunny is Blue Beetle, this makes more... You know what I'm saying? Like if they had a real star in that role, I think that gives people a reason independently of... Who is this character? Now I need to research who this is. They're asking me to follow this another mythos that I probably not sure if I care about, but they're asking me to buy in. At least you have a reason to go, which is, I think, what the appeal of Black Adam was. You know, by late last year, I think The Rock's stock had fallen significantly from where it was when they started making the movie. But at least you had The Rock. And because of that, that made three times more than this on opening weekend.
Totally. Honestly, I was surprised this did as well as it did because the buzz coming in was so... And in the movie's defense, after The Flash, you can tell Warner Brothers just bailed on any marketing budget. Anything that they had not prepaid, they pulled the plug. You know, they're just like, let's get this cost as low as possible. We're going to eat it on this because we've got this new thing coming.
They have another movie this year. Aquaman 2.
I know. That one's really interesting because, I mean, is he The Rock? No, but like there are Momoa fans. What do you think that one will do?
And there probably are Aquaman fans. I think that one does. I mean, it's Christmas. It's December 20th, so it's going to be very crowded theater competition at the time. I'll go 35 million, something like that. Like a little more than this, but not.
Sure.
Not anything significant.
It looks really bad too. It won't have this. Actually, had some decent critical buzz and word of mouth. I mean, this is definitely like in the upper tier of DC Warner Brothers movies to me, right? Was it for you?
Yeah, I think in terms of it actually being a fun movie, this was way up there. I mean, these films have, in my opinion, been so depressing, for so long.
God forbid, aside from Wonder,
aside from some moments in Wonder Woman, and in my opinion, I like Harley Quinn a lot, Margot Robbie, in this, and I like Shazam. I think those are really fun. But aside from that, it's like, man, these are really dark, depressing.
Yeah,
really aiming for the Christopher Nolan roided out vibe, and they're just trying to counter program Marvel. And I think now they realize, okay, we can kind of be them without being them. Yeah. And this feels like as much of a Spider-Man Marvel derivative. I mean, when I saw the trailer, I was like, is this Iron Man 2? It felt like Iron Man to me because of the suit. It's a combo of the Iron Man suit and the Iron Spider from Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And so I was like, wow, this does look a lot more Marvel-y. And I think that's not necessarily a bad thing, but this isn't going to go anywhere. So what does it matter? Like this character will probably never be in a movie again. So, you did this really fun thing and whatever momentum you're going to get out of it is going to run off a cliff because it has nowhere to go. You can't parlay this Blue Beetle love into Superman because it's not going to have any crossover whatsoever, different characters, different tone. So, I mean, if this thing was a huge success, would they have had to do a sequel for it and do like this independent Blue Beetle CU?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah. They'd be probably be like, that's what James Gunn to figure out. Work it in.
Yeah.
I mean, so much of what we talked about with this DCEU is not really at the feet of DC. It's just at the feet of Warner Brothers. You know, there's just so much, you know,
indecisiveness
and weird, like they just bet so hard so early without any results yet, you know, and leverage this thing so much that if it wasn't great and it wasn't even good, most of those movies, you know, it's like they just put so much money into like Snyder and then like doubling down on all of that. And, you know, honestly, the box office returns were decent at first, but they were diminishing every time. And, you know, it wasn't anything that really penetrated the culture at large. Like these movies should, these are made for mass audiences. And something like this, I think like the stakes were lower for Warner Brothers to not get as involved. And you just kind of have, you know, a director and a young kind of interesting cast that we haven't seen before. And, you know, kind of lets the DC come to the forefront a little more than the Warner Brothers. And it's much more successful because of circumstance. Now, if they had made this movie in like 2017, they probably would have had like they would have thrown $100 million at making Blue Beetle insufferable everywhere. But they kind of let this be this thing because they didn't want to spend money on it or really leverage it too high. And when you know it, it's a way, way better movie. But so as we get into kind of the movie specifically, what did you think? I mean, I didn't know any of these actors. And it's cool. So I did do some research before coming in. You know, the character is not historically Hispanic since 1939, but has been a Hispanic character in the comic book since I think mid-aughts, 06 or something. So I think that's really cool that they found that for this audience, for this group of kids to see themselves, you know, young Hispanic kids to see themselves as superheroes. That's something we haven't really seen in too much volume before. And, you know, kind of found this Latin cast that's, I wouldn't say mostly unknown, but unknown to me. And I thought on the whole, was really pretty successful in the casting of this.
Yeah. I thought it was a nice ensemble type movie. You didn't really have too many scenes with Zolo by himself.
No,
it was, you know, him with his family or him with his girl in mm-hmm. the movie. So, yeah, that was fun. I like the dynamic of the family. It's good to see George Lopez getting work in 2023.
Yeah.
Gotta love that.
It's less good to see Susan Sarandon.
He looks real weird in this movie. That beard did not work for me.
Yeah.
It was like weird. It looked like a Halloween beard that you would just glue on.
Yeah.
It did not look like he grew that at all.
Remember when, like, all of a sudden, ABC or something, like, just decided that they're putting their whole brand
their George Lopez network.
Yeah. That was a weird time. I hope he made a lot of money. He seems like a really nice guy.
Yes.
I'm not familiar with his stand-up or anything, but
I have had one encounter with him.
Oh, have you?
And it was at the Colonial Pro-Am.
Okay.
He was playing and mm-hmm. I was standing at the tee box. He walks up there with the Godfather, Luke Wilson from old school. Nice. And he started doing bits. He started like telling jokes and stuff. I was like, all right, at least this guy's here to like be George Lopez and not just.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
If you say George Lopez, like, stop talking to me. Yeah.
It's yeah.
Like, dude, you're playing in a pro-am.
It's, like, it's a public event.
Yes.
You're acting like you're Leo DiCaprio trying to sneak out of a club.
Right.
I know. That's good. That makes me like him even more.
Yes. So he was a pretty American treasure worthy at that event. So. That's all I can say about the interaction.
Who was the, who was the director? She's doing a Marvel movie next that did the Jordan Peele produced horror movie.
Nia DaCosta.
Anna DaCosta. I wouldn't say this is quite like an Anna DaCosta.
Nia, I think.
And pardon me, Nia. I'm looking at Angel Manuel Soto's thing here. So I combined the two. I wouldn't say it's as, you know, where you go, wow, I can't wait to see what she does next. But I will say This is a director, I think, that I'm going to kind of keep an eye on. He had done like one other thing that was written by Barry Jenkins, because he did Charm City Kings. But if you can make something like adequate with like all of this stuff going on and all the crap, and you know, $104 million budget, which is like reasonable for a superhero movie in these age, like I wouldn't be surprised if his next movie is awesome. Mm-hmm. Like in a better ecosystem, you know, if this guy came in and did like a super cool, you know, I don't even know what's Fast and Furious, you know, they keep those going. Sure. He does Fast 13. Like that wouldn't shock me, because I thought this was a pretty well, it's a little long, right? It's about 2 hours. Could have been hour 45, but other than that, I thought it was a pretty well paced movie.
Yeah, I thought it had some energy. It wasn't too choppy, which you get with a lot of these where it's just 2 hours of 1 second shots.
Right.
And I counted in here. I was like, man, I really hope the editing is going to be good. And it was. There were several moments where it's like 5-10 second shots, you know? I mean, he really tried to break it up, but there's still a lot of energy with it. And so that's what I appreciated about it. You know, Nia DaCosta's next movie, right?
I do, but I'm blanking right now.
Did you see the Marvels trailer in this?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, well, I'm not super enthused, but we'll see.
Man, it is just like Marvel to find young, promising directors and just give them a movie. And more power to them. I think that's the move you go for, is hire creative people. So
I haven't, Captain Marvel, I liked fine. Maybe one of the last Marvel movies, other than Spider-Man, that was like really good. But like, and it's not her fault, but I'm just like, so everything I've seen from the Marvels is so like, man, I just don't care about any of the characters, because I haven't seen like all 800 episodes of the show I'm required to see. I don't know.
We will talk about that in that episode, because I have some numbers to go over that might shock some people about Marvel and the recent Marvel phase. So I think the Marvels is probably the biggest test for superhero movies that we've seen in quite some time. Like, are they still alive, or are they dead in the water? Or have people moved on to other bigger and better things? Because when you look at the DC stuff, starting with, let's go Black Adam, because 2021 was still post-COVID hangover. Sure. So Black Adam made $60 million. Shazam, 30. The Flash, in the middle of the summer, 50. And Blue Beetle, 25.
Yeah. I bet they're thrilled with that 25.
I thought it would make 13. It literally made twice what I thought it would make. And, so
it might have decent legs. Like, it's not going to make 100 million. At least not domestically. But like, the two things it has is, like I said, it's going to have decent word of mouth. People are going to say, and it's a bleak, as we have looked at making our schedule, it's a pretty bleak month ahead in terms of stuff coming out. And it's so it'll have decent word of mouth, because people go, it's not bad. And then it has, you know, a niche audience of, you know, Hispanic folks that might be, you know, kind of lingering out to see it because it's, you know, representational and all of that. So I wouldn't be surprised if this does, like, now it did 25, like, it could do, would you be shocked if it did 12 next weekend, 10? And just kind of, like, you would be surprised? Or
yeah,
you think
I would be surprised.
Okay, I'm interested. It might linger on okay, but who knows? It's not where, like, everyone that came out of The Flash was like, woof, that's so much CGI. And, you know, all of the social media was just bits about it and blah, blah, blah. I haven't seen too many bits about this.
Yeah, it's well received. I just don't. I'm like, if Mission Impossible doesn't have legs beyond a weekend.
Yeah, but that had two monsters coming out right after.
That is true.
This doesn't. I mean, you know, I don't know. I mean, you're probably right, but I feel like, you know, they you know, a year ago they're devastating.
Opening this weekend against it is a Gran Turismo, based on a true story. Bottoms. Yeah. Okay. And I think American Graffiti is back this week too. So that takes most of the fan base away from this American Graffiti alone, right?
Yeah. That and Bottoms. Yeah.
Yeah.
Big Rachel
Snow. And things. Jurassic Park back in theaters this weekend. Cool. So, I mean, there is some stuff. But, yeah, I mean, if it does, that's fantastic. I think you can only hope for good movies to do well so that they take the right things away.
Yeah. If they lose $50 million on this, like, they're probably pretty thrilled. Give it. I mean, it's made $50 million already worldwide, 45.
I think so it probably, they like, probably got to hope that they lose 100 on it. Yeah. In marketing, they make the budget back and lose the marketing money.
But like to our point earlier, they like didn't spend nearly as much on the marketing as they normally would. Cause I think The Flash did this movie some favors, right? Where it's like, well, let's pull out everything that we haven't prepaid. So that marketing budget might be smaller than it normally would have been, which would help.
Absolutely.
If they made 45 on this on half the marketing budget that they were intending, they take that trade as they go into whatever the new iteration of this universe is. Like, that's actually not too bad in terms of a sunk cost.
I mean,
it's tens of millions of dollars, but it could have been way worse. Well, get me defending DC, man. I'm just so in the bag for them. You are.
That check better clear.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the marketing budget that they spent.
You've sold your soul.
Yeah, totally. So,
who had this in the movie draft? I don't even remember.
I don't think it went, to be honest with you, because I think we started how I can look at. I have a spreadsheet of the pick. Oh no, wait, no, it did.
If I remember, I think Brian. I thought Brian picked all the DC movies, and I was thinking, man, you have sold your soul for this draft. It better work out for you.
Yeah,
because I mean, he did take The Flash too, which I know he did not want to do.
Yep. And Mission Impossible just sunk him.
It did. Yeah. That was the one he needed to do. And
I Ted Stray.
I honestly deserve to lose with taking Indiana Jones first overall. But, my second pick would have been Barbie. That was what I was debating, but I figured the volatility on Barbie was way higher than Indiana Jones.
Well, you ended up taking Mario second.
Yes.
Before, because I got Barbie. I don't know how I got
Barbie. I thought you got Barbie before I got
Mario. I went indie.
I knew Mario would make $1 billion.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Mario's a great pick. It went indie. You went indie. Brian went Mission Impossible. I went Fast X. Then I went Guardians 3. Brian went Spider-Verse. You went Mario. Then you went Little Mermaid. That one hurts.
No, I think that did pretty well.
It did. I'm just saying against Barbie.
Oh, yeah.
And then Brian did Transformers, and with the ninth pick.
Oh, Brian did Transformers, too. Selling the soul, brother.
Yeah. I got Barbie with the ninth pick. Value, baby.
Yeah, that's what I was saying on our last update. I thought you got that in, like, the ninth round or something. So that's the more impressive part of it. But to me, the logic was way more volatile. It was either going to be great or it was going to be terrible. Yeah. And I was like, in my mind, Indiana Jones was like, the worst it's going to be is, like, 63%.
Yeah.
On the tomato meter. And it ended up at 69. Nice.
Nice little score.
So, yeah. You take some L's, but thank God for the Super Mario Bros. Movie. That's all I got to say.
Absolutely. So what do you think of the supporting cast? The grandparents and parents, I thought, honestly, in terms of what can be very, I mean, some of it was kind of Aunt May type stuff, like not a whole lot to do there, but I thought I enjoyed all those actors. I mean, Sarandon was Sarandon-y, but
that's the big star of this. Sarandon Nation. I mean, they are, they come out strong. I mean, it's at least another $50 million. This,
yeah. Can I give a spoiler? Did you watch the mid-credit scene on this?
Yes.
Okay. So, you know, they set up the old Blue Beetles coming back, right? The cord guy, and they, you know, you only hear the voice. It's kind of like the Joker with Barry, whatever, and in the last Batman. But like, I'm like, who was that? Like, I didn't recognize that voice. So like, I come home yesterday. I'm like frantically looking it up, and it's like an uncredited actor. Like, really, you couldn't get anyone. You couldn't get anyone to just do that voice so you could set up them coming back for a sequel. Like, they didn't even, I feel like that was a role, since it's voice only, they were just going to cast, you know, like in March and be like, yeah, it's either going to be, I don't know, Billy Crudup or you know, Orlando Bloom. It'll be one of these two, you know. And like all the stuff hit with the Flash, and then all the stuff with James Gunn and Zach and everything, and they're just like, they totally bailed out of marketing on this. They're like, don't even hire anyone. We're not doing a sequel. Like, just,
they might have had to hire a non-union actor that would work. It's like we can't even, or a union actor that wouldn't put his name on it because he didn't want to get yelled at by the union.
So that made me laugh so hard, though. I was like, really? That's just.
But it was a recognizable voice. I didn't recall it being like a recognizable.
It wasn't, but I was like, why did I felt like I was supposed to recognize it? I might have just been my own thing, because those are always reveals, right? Like, gosh, it's so and so. So I was like, that wasn't clear.
Did you stay for the post-credit scene? It was. It was Black Adam comes in. And he's like,
yeah,
Blue Beetle, we need to talk.
Yeah. And then he pitched his own tequila for a while.
Yeah.
He said, if you had.
Has Dwayne The Rock Johnson ever considered that looking like a giant thumb might not be the best look?
I don't know.
He looks like a sentient
Rock the Dwayne now. Johnson.
Yo, Rock the Dwayne. Yes.
I know. He's very thumbish. He, you know, that's a lot of charisma there. I won't ever fault The Rock too hard, but God, he just needs to go away for like 8 years.
Yeah.
And then I think we'd be excited again. Like, go away for 5 years.
Dude, I'm telling you, WrestleMania. Yeah, WrestleMania. That's the way to win everybody back is be The Rock again and not Dwayne Johnson.
But yeah, it's interesting.
But hey, I think big takeaways for me.
I don't know if
he
can pass the WWE PEDs test at this point. That's my theory.
That's why Bautista probably had to leave. It's like, man, I need to look really good in these movies, though.
Yeah,
I can't not do.
Yeah, Disney doesn't.
Did you see the movie? They're doing a movie with Bautista and Momoa.
Wow,
the roid budget is like at least $50 million alone on that movie to keep those guys juiced.
That's higher than like the Charlie Sheen Coke budget on 2.5 Men, right?
Yeah. Well, $50 million a season, but if you add it up every season, it's actually more.
Winning. I'm bringing that back. I'm gonna start quoting him all the time and talking about Tiger Blood. It's been 12 years, right? That's funny again. So here's my final question about this. And we can talk about it a little more. My final question I have for you is like the ultimate test of these films, because it's interesting here because it's particularly in a vacuum because this isn't going to happen. But as this comes out, it's kind of won't say it's a great movie by any means, but it's kind of a pleasant surprise that it's not god awful. Would you be, if they were like, hey, same creative team's coming back, Blue Beetle 2, 2025. Would you, and you're walking into that movie, we're doing the podcast 2025. Would you be excited?
I wouldn't be excited, but I would not be like, ugh.
Yeah, same.
I would just be like, okay.
That's a real compliment.
I think that's
the nicest thing I can say about this. I wouldn't be dreading it. Yeah.
The worst thing I can say about this, and again, I like the energy. I like that DC is trying to do something fun. Worst thing I can say about this brought almost, aside from the representation aspect, it brought absolutely nothing new to the table
totally
in terms of like what we've seen in every superhero movie for the past 15 years. It was a total CGI fest with effects that looked copied and pasted from Marvel movies. Yeah. Just like, let's change the shape of the thing.
That's a great point.
Even the suit with like the heads up display and everything they do with Iron Man. Like, man, this has already been, find a different way to do it.
You're absolutely right. And the funny thing about this is success breeds criticism and failure breeds like encouragement sometimes. If this was Marvel's Blue Beetle, because again, I don't know any of this comic book stuff. I don't know. I probably wouldn't be as positive on this. I would come out going, that was so derivative of their stuff. Find a new formula, blah, blah. But because DC has been such crap on the whole, you know, with these adaptations, and so morose and, you know, overly just everything, an assault on every sense. The fact that this was just like kind of a B-team Marvel movie is like, that's one of, like, I came out going like, hey, good for them. They kind of put one together. It's so funny, but you're absolutely not wrong. In a vacuum, I don't even know if this is good, but like the fact that I didn't want to pull my eyes out for 2 hours, I'm like, yeah. Great movie.
And it makes you think in the big picture about why this didn't perform well in the bit, you know, with mass audiences, is are people seeing trailers like this and they're just rolling their eyes? Oh, another CG fest. I want to see somebody fly an F-15, or I want to see John Wick really do these moves. Those, I really think maybe audiences have gotten a little bit smarter since the pandemic.
It's smarter, and also just like maybe they love this stuff and like this is the thing people love the most, but like there was a threshold, and maybe that threshold was like 35 of these. Like you make and that's combining DC, Marvel, and everything. But like people were really cool with these for a long time, mostly because most of the Marvel stuff in its original iterations was pretty good. But like people were into this. This was like the one piece of mass entertainment that everyone could kind of agree upon. We'd all go see Marvel movies, and we had a huge threshold for it. But like, and then the DC ones were like much lesser, but like, okay, there's the set audience for it, blah, blah, blah. But then, you know, after 40 of these, people, I think, finally were just like, all right, I'm out. And that goes for Marvel and DC at this point. So it's going to take something, I think, really, you know, and these just come and go now. They're just because they always were kind of like, you know, fluffy and meaningless, even though entertaining and good. Now they feel even more like these just don't linger on the culture at all. It's like a Thor comes out on Friday and it's like everyone's excited, and on Sunday no one thinks about it ever again. Like it's so temporary. Part of that's everything in culture now, but it just feels like these are just in one ear out the other, even if they're good, and especially if they're mediocre. Like most of these have been from both production companies the last year and a half. And then you add in people put on Disney Plus and they're asked to watch 40 hours of Loki so that they can understand why Iron Man's still dead. Like it's just the threshold has been reached.
Yeah, there's an interesting conversation around Disney Plus as well and the future of that. Has that really worked out for them the way they wanted it to? I think it's changing rapidly. This industry, how these movies are put out there, the risk that's taken on them, people's reactions. I mean, it's all changed drastically in the last 5 years. And
totally. And people are going to have to shift streaming
their thinking.
And I was, by the way, I say this with all like transparency and stuff, and I honestly still don't really understand how all the machinations of licensing versus own content and whatever, but it's like, I would have told all these people, like, it seemed like great strategy, you know? Hey, Disney, pull all your stuff off Netflix, launch your own Disney Plus. HBO, get your own, you know, HBO Max thing going. Everyone, this is the future. Netflix has proven it. Go to streaming, make content, make people pay you 10 to 15 bucks a month, and you will make more money than ever. I would have said the same thing. I think like that's the future. And it wasn't, like, we were all wrong. And this rush to streaming, these things are losing tons of money.
The problem is that, their ability to crank out new content and quality content isn't up to par. And people having the movies, the back catalog available only gets you so far. It probably gets you, somebody buys Disney Plus. After 6 months, they've watched all the movies that they wanted to go back and watch. And unless you have a kid that's just going to pick it up and turn on whatever movie all day, every day, it's not worth it to you to make the time to watch everything. I mean, Star Wars is my favorite property, and I'm like 3 seasons behind on the Disney Plus Star Wars stuff. Like, it's my favorite thing, and I can't even get time.
And that's part of it, too, is like so much of it, even the stuff that's good, is like so cinematic, like not necessarily cinematic is not the right word.
There's another one starting freaking today, Ahsoka. Right. So I'm 4 behind.
TV like is kind of built to be somewhat bingeable, in that like I don't want to give my entire brain over to this. I kind of want to just relax and whatever. And like, you know, some of these shows are like they are 10-hour movies. They're 12.
It's like a
movie.
Game of Thrones every 6 months. I mean,
and you're just even if
it's so like much you investment, said, yeah.
Love the like Andor's great, but like I've got to be locked in on this for 11 hours and I'm just not. Some people are built for that. That's great. I'm not. And it's hard. It's like, and then everyone just kind of feels behind all this stuff. And you're right. Like, but then the catch 22 of it is if they're not putting out a show every 3 months,
that's like well produced and financed and with like stars in it, then people don't think the streaming platform's worth anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's been funny. Like the most messed up company coming into this, I don't know if there was a grand strategy or if they just got lucky because they just were so far behind. It's like Sony is making a ton of profit just licensing their crap to all these platforms. They're just like, yeah, we don't do that. So just pay us.
That's what everyone was doing when Netflix started. And they're like, so Netflix is making too much money off our movies. So we better do this.
And it turns out that's a better business for everyone but Netflix.
It's a better business for them to have their stuff on Netflix than it is to have it on Disney Plus. Like they, more 100%. People would watch it than.
Yeah.
And they can charge, you know what? A ton more now, probably. If they do that. Because Netflix has the money to pay.
Totally. And there's this thought now of like, do we work out deals with Netflix where like you basically treat Netflix as the movie theater?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And you say, Netflix has an audience. People are just that one. People just don't cancel. They're there. What if we put season 2 of Andor on Netflix for 2 weeks?
Right.
You know, and let it build an audience and then say, hey, if you want more of this, it's over on Disney Plus forever.
Mm-hmm.
But like, what, you know, and using Netflix as the cinema house, the digital cinema house, I'm going for. I don't know if that's a good strategy either.
I think that's a great. I mean, I think there's just too many egos at play there. They're not willing to say we need your help.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And then, I mean, this is like, I hate to. I mean, it actually kind of makes sense with this conversation because Apple might be rumored to be buying Disney at some point or some aspect of Disney, but. Steve Jobs used to say in the 90s when Apple was making a comeback that Microsoft doesn't have to lose for Apple to win.
Mm-hmm.
We can both exist and be successful. And I think that really applies to streaming. Like we can find a way to coexist together and everybody makes money instead of us just trying to take each other's customers.
Yeah. Disney Plus is the place we don't even, you know, we don't make content without selling it to other places, but it's the place where the Disney vault lives forever. So to your point, when you have a 6 through 12 year old, you're going to have Disney Plus as just, you know, to keep yourself sane. And it doesn't cost us anything because we subsidize that cost with selling our new stuff to Netflix or to theaters. And we can get that back going again. Mm-hmm. And then of course it all feeds the theme park business, whatever. But again, I don't know if that would work either, but how it currently is structured is not working. And, you know, this, get back on Blue Beetle, like this was initially developed, right, as an HBO Max movie.
Yeah.
I mean, that, and you know, that just is indicative of their strategy changing constantly, too. It's like theatrical, okay, then COVID, well, everything goes to HBO Max, and then breaking people of that habit, then it's that, it's got to go to theaters before HBO Max, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. So it's so... in the moment, everything is really these big shifts and, no real vision. And I don't have the vision either. I mean, you look at even things like I'm actually putting a deck together on this for work. It's like, you even look at things like ESPN now, you know, Pixar and Marvel were bought with ESPN money, right? Cause the hated cable bundle turned out was a golden goose for Disney. Cause they were getting $8 from 100 million people every month.
Yep.
For ESPN as part of that cable bundle. And now that's taken a nosedive. They've not made up those subs of the ESPN Plus. And now it's a loser for Disney. ESPN's losing money because they have to spend so much money on live rights for to be viable and blah, blah, blah. Keep saying blah, blah, blah. Sorry.
Everyone's just convinced that model was broken when in fact it wasn't really broken. We were just bored.
Yeah. It might have been a little broken for the consumer, but it sure as heck wasn't broken for the Disneys of the world.
And maybe not for the, but cable TV, you could pay $50 a month and have 700 channels.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's a pretty good deal considering what we pay now for what we get.
Sure. And like, honestly, if they had just made the UX better on digital cable, you know, like getting stuff on demand and stuff was really like
YouTube TV is now, terrible. Like if it was like that. Yeah.
Yeah. I think people would have
unlimited DVR, watch on your phone, all that kind of, yep. You're right.
It turns out, and now who knows if we can figure out a way technologically and maybe the Sunday ticket, things like that will lead back to it. But
Quibi.
It's so, it's so wild. You're right. Yeah. That turned out to be a really good system for like the ecosystem of entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
And we broke it apart because we thought we were going to the future in it. And maybe we still are, but that future is not profitable. Part of the reason both writers and actors are on strike right now too. And a lot of revenue goes away. It's not unlike too, like, I think it was Matt Damon or someone did that long speech of like, why does no one make the $40 million movie anymore? And he's like, well, cause like there were these things called DVDs for 10 years and you like couldn't lose money. You could make, if you made a $40 million movie, even if it made $15 million at the box office, if it was good, you were going to sell $50 million in DVD sales.
Mm-hmm.
And then everything was subsidized. And then streaming comes. It's, oh, it's so much better. You don't have to have these discs. Everything's immediate. So much better content. Well, guess what goes away? There's a cost with that. It's like the Arab Spring. Like, it sounds, understandably, in the moment, I'm one of these people. It sounds like a great idea to get rid of like all these tyrants in the Middle East, but sometimes what comes next is worse. And
trust me, as somebody who works in a subscription-based business, mm-hmm. it's very hard to stay afloat without ads.
Uh-huh.
So when people get angry, cancel because, oh, they added ads or now I have to watch ads before, it's like, dude, that's the reason that they can do what they do is because of these ads. So just deal with it. You know, that's honestly how I feel about it. I mean, it's how they make money on this thing.
Yeah. It's additional revenue stream.
Because your $5 a month isn't doing crap to, you know, develop this Mandalorian series that cost $1 billion over 10 episodes. Totally. So. Yep. Well, I see it's going to be interesting to see 1 year from now where we are with DC, with HBO, with Netflix.
Even movies. I mean, will we all still be on strike?
Yeah.
The
real power move would be if Netflix bought AMC. And then it is the movie house.
Yeah, for sure.
Or Cinemark or something.
We're in a very weird time. And I don't mean to like stop down on, I know it's a Blue Beetle episode, but like this is a movie that is a casualty of that weird time. So I think it's worth discussion because this is a movie that lives between these worlds of everything, of, you know, literal universes being rebuilt around, you know, without this movie. And so it's certainly a symptom of a very broken system.
You feel bad about the timing. I feel bad about the timing of this though, because a movie with this cast and with this message deserves to be seen by these fans. And it's like, you're right. It's a casualty of the timing and it sucks. Like if this movie had come out in 2018, it would have done way better and it would have made the impact that it was meant to have. But it's just kind of in a weird spot where no one's really paying attention and that sucks.
Yep. It does. Should we grade it out?
Let's do it. I am going to grade this one B+. What about you?
Yeah, I'm going to go slightly below you, just a solid B.
Nice. It's maybe the highest grade I've given a DC movie ever. I can't recall, but maybe. Wonder what Batman Shane's going to think. We'll have to find out.
This will probably be the one he doesn't like.
Yeah. It's no Zack Snyder's Justice League.
And nothing is. Nothing ever will be.
Nothing will touch it.
All right. Well, let's hit them, folks. Should we hit him with it? Should we hit him with a weekly recommend?
I think we can. Yeah.
Let's do it.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Weekly recommends.
Kent, what you got for us?
Yeah, I'm going to recommend this show on HBO that the Safdies are doing, Telemarketers. Have you watched this yet? Mm-hmm.
I haven't. It's been recommended to me twice now, And it's definitely going to be shortly on my list. I'm excited. I like the Safdies and all that. You dig it?
I dig it. It's basically these guys that worked at this telemarketing company. And one of them basically filmed himself the whole time, him and his buddy. And they kind of turned it into this documentary. But some of these people in this are like, how are these real people? How are these not actors? There's one guy that's that is Chris Farley, like an exact twin of Chris Farley, the way he talks, acts, the drug use. I mean, there's some pretty shocking stuff in this, but it's basically about telemarketing and as a whole and how many tens of millions of dollars they make yearly doing this. And so it's really enlightening in that front, but it's also very well done, very well produced. Nice. And I think you'll dig it.
Nice. I'll have to check it out. Yeah. I'm fascinated by that world. It's the worst, but you know, oddly mesmerizing. Okay. Well, I've got mine. Mine, as we record this, is a great one. I think I've recommended it before, but it's great timing. We got a Frasier reboot coming, as you know.
Oh yeah.
Kent, in October 12th on Paramount Plus, world's greatest app. And I'm going to recommend the original run of Frasier because it's just enough time now. You got about 6 weeks before the reboot, which may suck. Who knows? But like, you've never done. I feel like Seinfeld, Friends, understandably, great shows. Get most of the 90s love. But as I rewatched all of these Friends we did and Seinfeld we did throwback seasons on, all the episodes of those. Man, I wonder sometimes this one might hold up the best. Frasier is so good, so funny. So many great lines and characters. Kelsey Grammer, weirdest guy in the world, I'm sure, but like, gosh, he's a great sitcom actor. And David Hyde Pierce and everything. The cast is incredible. Some of the best writing ever. And it's just, I think it holds up way better than Friends, comedically, and holds up, almost on the level, on the same level as Seinfeld comedically. So, yeah, great show that I feel like some people like in our audience demographic maybe missed because it seemed boring when we were kids because it was about this this erudite show that's like above us. But like it's a pretty stupid, farcical, goofy show. Just it's about smart people, but like it's a very standard sitcom. So it's an easy one to just put on before bed while you eat dinner or whatever and just laugh at. So Frasier's great. And so catch up before the reboot, which may be terrible or may be great too.
It's got such an interesting tone to it. Just the dialogue and the way it's written is oddly like Shakespearean in a way. It's just
sometimes,
something like you've never really heard in a sitcom is the way these people talk and interact. It's got a very unique quality to it that I can't
sometimes
really pinpoint.
They'll do 9 minutes of just like purely physical, straight out of the Marx Brothers. Farce, where it's just like people going in and out of doors and all that, like really silly stuff, it's got all of that too. So I just think it's especially, I think if you're interested in comedy, the writing and direction of it and the way, it's a great acting lesson too, because like, these characters are like, they're overacted in a way. And that might be a little bit what you're speaking about. It's theatrical in a way. The acting is so huge, but it's not against character. Like it works.
Just
like
the way Frasier talks is just such a unique way of speaking. And that's
he has a beautiful voice, like a speaking voice. Like all jokes aside about Kelsey Grammer, that dude has one of the best pair of pipes. His singing's meh, but just as a speaker, like I could listen to that guy narrate anything.
How dare you?
I know, our theme song. But it's coming back, man. One of my favorites. So
awesome.
If that's one that's like a blank on your 90s pop culture resume, fill it in. It's fun.
The season's going to end with Niles like walking in, isn't it?
It's got to, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Niles is.
You can't not have Niles in.
Costanza, Niles. Man, I'm trying to think. Oh, Michael Scott.
Yeah.
That might be my, I don't know who my Ringo would be, but that's probably my, at least for males.
Joe Bluth.
Joe Bluth's up there for sure. Buster Bluth's up there too. Tobias is up there. Yeah. Yeah. Probably one of those three.
Yeah.
Ron Swanson, maybe. I don't know. There's some great ones, but Niles is pantheon.
100%. That's awesome. How many? It's just 8 episodes, right? Or is it
8 to 10 is the new one? Yeah. But the old one is ton. It's like 22 episodes for like 10 seasons. So like it is a lot, but they're, you know, they're 22 minutes. You can crank through them on Paramount Plus, and it only season one has the really bad, 90s sitcom mullets, you know, you know, Seinfeld's got a couple of those seasons too. All the men in 1992 decided to let the lettuce grow a little bit, but
and puff it up that, too. It wasn't like, let's just have long hair. It's like, no, let's tease it as well.
But, after that, I promise for those. And honestly, like the apartment and like the set kind of like Seinfeld, like actually aged pretty well aesthetically. Yeah. So it doesn't really feel as old after you get through season one.
Awesome. Can't wait for your thoughts on that. Yeah. My friend, that's going to be great.
Yeah. Maybe Batman and Shane and I will do a VIP ep on that or something.
Sure.
He's a Frasierite as well.
He is he knows as much about Frasier as he does about DC, maybe.
He does. I think he went to tapings of the new one. So
yeah.
I think he saw two eps. So good stuff. All righty. Well, this was a fun ep. Blue Beetle. I think our verdict is better than we thought and better than it deserved to be. And we'll be back with Brian in tow in the next couple weeks. Not going to lie to you. Rough slate ahead in terms of movies as we bridge the gap from the summer season to the Oscar award season. But we're going to have fun with it. We're going to make it fun. We're going to bring the energy. We've got some movie draft results and some movie draft drafting to do for the next season of that. But but look, there's people that listen to the show for us to review movies that are out and in the zeitgeist. And there's people that listen to the show for us to bring the energy and the bits. And I feel like if that's that, you're going to have a great next 5 weeks because, you know,
it's Gran Turismo season, baby.
Let's get there. All right. Until then, we will see you at the cinema.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face.
They're making me ya-ya. Salads and scrambled eggs.
They're calling again.